you see the problem, it's easy to let it go. So then you start just waiting in the moment. And usually the mind goes to the next level of stillness, the next level of peace. Nearly always, once you get insight, peace comes right behind. The simile, which you probably have read about in the sutras, if you haven't read about it, you've probably heard it from monks or nuns. And it is the symbol of delusion and control and power called Mara. Have you ever heard Mara before? Yeah, he's a bad guy. But I don't know why he's called a guy. And that is really sexist in Buddhism. But nevertheless, because of 2,500 years ago, that's what you get. So anyway, Mara is this guy who comes and deludes you and upsets you and just does all sorts of sneaky stuff to stop you becoming enlightened. And all these great monks and nuns, all they would do, they wouldn't fight Mara. They wouldn't sort of bash him up with their psychic powers. All they do is, I know you, Mara. That's all. Insight. To know it. And then, according to the simile, Mara, shoulders down, head drooping, the nun knows me, the monk knows me, and has to disappear. He goes off. It's always this incredibly powerful being, always trying to stop the Buddha becoming enlightened and other people becoming enlightened. You don't overcome Mara with willpower or with force. It's always through insight. I know you, Mara. And then Mara disappears. And so then there's nothing between you and peace. You go deeper into peace. So on your path of meditation, you will find, you will have obstacles, blockages from time to time. And they are overcome with insight, understanding what's going on. Why is this happening? And then you find, once you see the wisdom, insight arises and calm follows straight afterwards. That's why you can experience the result of insight is calm. And the result of calm is insight. The more peaceful you are, the more you see. And is my one of my famous similes, the simile of walking up the road to this monastery. Or, just a bodhinyana. Now, because you live in a place, you always tend to go in a car. Even sometimes, I do get some exercise. I walk over here every morning for the last few mornings. But, sometimes people see me and say, no, I jump out, get in the car. But I need exercise. And they say, yeah, but I need merit. So I get in their car out of compassion for what happens to me. But every now and again, you can actually convince someone to allow you to walk. And so one day, coming back from some appointment, a very beautiful sunny day, I told the driver to let me out on the bottom of the road. Because I wanted to walk up the hill to the monastery. Plenty of time, nice exercise, beautiful day. And that is when I started walking up this road. I think at that time I'd been living here for about 7-8 years. And this was the first time ever I'd walked up the hill to Bodhinyana Monastery from the bottom. 7 years up and down that road in a car. And this is the first time I walked up. Dania, how long have you been? You've been living here 5 years now, haven't you? How many times have you walked up that hill? Shame. We should try it one day, because what happens is I was walking up that hill thinking this is a nice exercise, not really expecting anything, and I could not recognize my surroundings. I just couldn't recognize the hill. And that was really quite disturbing. What's going on? I've been up and down this road for 7 years, 2 or 3 times a week. How come I don't know it? If you don't believe me, when you get home, you've got your apartment or house, where, if you're lucky, on your road in which you live. You always, nearly always, go up and down that road in your car. one day, just, you know, walk. You know, go to maybe 500 meters from your house and walk along that road. And you'll have the same experience I had. You just can't recognize your surroundings. It's totally different. And that was so surprising for me that I just decided to stand still and try and figure this out. And as I stood still, that's when the hillside changed again. And I saw things I'd never ever noticed before. And everything I saw became very beautiful. More beautiful than I could remember, you know, viewing through a car window. And that, again, was such a weird experience. So I contemplated it, soon figured out what was going on. And this was a simile which I've used very often for the relationship between calm or stillness and insight. Why you do need to be still to get insight. Because what happens when you are looking through the window of a speeding car, the light which hits the back of your eye, the retina, doesn't have time to form a proper image before light from a new image comes up, dislodges the first, and your eye has to deal with another image, and then another image, another image. You know, you should know from your biology at school that, you know, the sense of sight is a chemical reaction on the back of your retina. And that chemical reaction does not have enough time to finish before it's another image is on when you're watching through the window of a speeding car. So number one, the images weren't fully formed. You just had, you know, like a quick, you know, not enough information to form a full image. And number two, the colors weren't properly rich enough because they didn't have enough time to form. And the mind didn't have enough time to investigate what was going on before you had to deal with another image. That's like looking through the window of a speeding car. When you were walking, you were going much more slowly. You had more time. So the image in the back of the eye had more time to form. The colors were deeper. There was more detail. My mind had more time to see it. So that's why when I walked up the hill, I saw so much more, which you just can't see. You haven't got time, you know, physiologically, to see things. And when I was perfectly still, just standing there watching, only then did the picture fully form. You know, like if you've ever developed your own photographs, which I used to do at school, you know, in a science class, you know, you just, usually they're just digital now, so you don't, you know, develop any photographs. But when you used to develop them, you get this sort of the negative, or you get the photographic paper, and then you, to develop it, you put it in this chemical solution, and you'd wait, and you could see the picture emerge slowly, and the colors form on this photographic paper. It took time. If you took it out too soon, you know, the image wouldn't be properly complete. And that's exactly what happens in the brain and in the sense of sight. When I gave it the full time it needed, saw every detail. I had insight. I could see everything. And there's so much I'd missed before because I was going too fast. When I slowed down and became still, you could see so much more. And the surprising part of this for me was when I was still, not only did you see much more, but it became so much more beautiful as well. The grass was never so green. You know, the flowers were fluorescent. And it wasn't anything weird. What it was is the yellows in the petals of some flower, now they had a fully time to form, and you had the full blast of that color yellow instead of just pastel because you look at it too quickly. And that is a very accurate simile to how insight happens. You know, in the world, you've got so much stuff to do. Even yesterday, I had lots of stuff to do. I was rushing around yesterday afternoon. So, you know, I know what it's like. You know, you don't say, oh, you monks. It's all right for you to say this. You don't know what it's like to live in the real world, rushing around, doing so much stuff. I don't know if any of you were there some years ago when I gave a talk at, is it called World Trade Center in the harbor in Singapore? Yeah, there's a big auditorium there. I think it was the 100th year of the Buddhist Union or something, so they wanted me to go and give a celebratory talk. And on there, I remember at question time, This guy came to the microphone, and that's a comment he made to me. He said, "Ajahn Brahm, very nice talk, but quite frankly, what do you know about lives such as ours? You know, we have to work so hard. And what you say, yeah, interesting, but, you know, it's irrelevant to people like us." And when he sort of said that, you know, I rose to the challenge and said, "Look, sir, this is what I've been doing since this morning." I think that morning I got up at 4 o'clock and just started working straight from 4 o'clock. And it's maybe about now 10 o'clock, you know, and even my meal is not rest. You know, people come and serve you, and then you've got to give blessings. You know, meal is work for monks. And I've been going non-stop all day till about 10 o'clock. And I said, "What do you mean I don't know how you live? And I probably work harder than you do." And he came to the microphone again and said, "Wow, I didn't realize monks worked so hard." He said, "You know, before I heard this, I always thought one day I would become a monk. Not now. I'm going to stick to my job in IT." I really lost that one. But, you know, when you do work hard, you can't see very much. But when you actually go slower, you start to see more. And you have slowed down enormously since you came here. And so not only can you actually, you know, see the beautiful sunsets or the clouds in the sky, you start to appreciate this place, appreciate yourself and other people as well. Not only do you see more, but what you see is much more beautiful. Fantastic. This is the nature of insight. It comes from calm, from stillness. You see more, and the free gift. What you see is always more beautiful and more happy, the more still you are. So, that's why insight will lead to calm, lead to happiness. Calm, going still, leads to insight, which also leads to happiness. These three always go around one another, and you cannot separate them. So, how we actually do this in practice is that whenever you are meditating, sometimes you have a teacher, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you have the books, sometimes they're not available for you. But whenever you are meditating, you know, your mindfulness is there, you're aware. But mindfulness always has a job to do as well. It just doesn't know, but it responds appropriately. With mindfulness and stillness, you get insight, and insight tells you what to do next. My old sort of joke, sort of, it was about the... Did I say this one earlier on this retreat about the woman who went to... Yeah, I think I did the first night. The woman who went to the Buddhist talk, she was a very wealthy lady, and she told the guard at the gate of her mansion to watch out for burglars, to be mindful of burglars. And so she went to the temple, listened to a talk, went back home and found the burglars had been in her house. And she really scolded the guard at her house, "I told you to be mindful, and look, I've been burgled." And the guard said, "I was mindful. When I saw the burglars going in, I noted, burglar going in, burglar going in, burglar going in. When I saw all your jewelry being taken out, I noted, jewelry going out, jewelry going out. When I saw them going in again, burglars going back in. When I saw them taking your safe, safe going out, safe." I was very mindful all the time. That's a bit cheeky, but you can see the point there. So now your mindfulness, you're aware, you've got some insight into what's going on. But really what happens with the insight? It tells you what to do. And insight would usually lead to solving problems, to calling the police, or to try and getting the robbers out of the house, scaring them or whatever. And with mindfulness in meditation, it chases out the defilements and hindrances from your mind. They are robbers who come to rob your peace and your happiness. So the mindfulness is there. If you're still enough, you start to see thoughts coming up. They're robbing you. They're burglars. Taking away your contentment, your happiness. With all these thoughts of what your husband's doing when you're away for 9 days. But all the thoughts of what the stock market's doing, what my job is going to be, well, what my kids are up to. Mum's away for 9 days. Yes, party. But all those thoughts, they're robbing your happiness and peace. They are thieves. So the mindfulness can see that, you get insight into it, and the result of insight is letting go. You see those thoughts, you have insight into them, they're useless. Why do I want these? Not the right time, they're stealing things from me. So you let them go. When people say, how do I let go? Through insight, through seeing. Once you see Mara, you don't have to chase Mara away. You don't have to kick him in the butt. He goes anyway, automatically. When you have insight, the problem vanishes automatically. And that's a great thing to experience in meditation. You do that a few times, you're getting stuck somewhere, don't keep trying. Use insight. What's going on? What's happening? And once you have that insight, if it is insight, if it's true insight, it always results in more peace. The obstacle, the problem, the hindrance is gone, and you go deeper. And that is how we develop the deep meditations. And now you've got things like the breath. You can watch the breath, but you haven't got the delightful breath. Why? You can watch the breath, but it's not joyful. It's not umphy. Why? And you, why is that, like standing back, seeing a bigger picture, and then you say, "Ah, I know why. Just, you know, I'm just too negative. You know, whenever I see anybody, I'm jealous, pick faults in them. You know, whenever I, you know, go anywhere, it's never good enough. Whenever I go to someone else's place, I'm always trying to fix it up." And you get insight. One of those great insights, for example, I'm telling insights from my own life, which first of all came from my daily life, and I use those for meditation. There is no real difference between meditation and daily life, basically. If you get insights in meditation which make you peaceful in meditation, they'll also make your life more happy. What makes your life more happy, use it in meditation, and it works there too. So that particular insight was, again, me having to work so hard because you're the abbot, you've got all these managerial responsibilities. And so I was having this lifestyle 7 days a week. I was working two jobs, basically. One job in Bodhinyana Monastery, teaching the monks from Monday to Friday. And Saturday and Sunday, on Friday evening, teaching the people in our city centre in Nolamara. You know, there's two big jobs there. And so I'm working really hard over the weekend, teaching meditation, giving Dharma talks, also the administration of our Buddhist society. You know, my title in the Buddhist Society of Western Australia is Spiritual Director. But everybody knows me as a spiritual dictator. Because I've been there so long, I know, basically I know everything from the beginning, so I usually have much more authority. So anyway, working really hard there. And on Sunday evening, coming back to Bodhinyana Monastery, talking to the monks, make sure everything's okay. And then Monday morning, you know, more work, getting sort of everything done in the start of the week for Bodhinyana Monastery. I know people like you would come. And they would come and talk to me and say, "Your monastery is so peaceful. It's so beautiful. It's so serene." And I said, "What are you talking about? There's so much work here. There's so much to do. You know, there's lots of people asking questions. I've got to help them with their problems in life. I've got to teach them meditation. I've got to make sure the builder comes on time. I've got to do this. Oh, this is so much work for me." "What do you mean it's peaceful?" And then after a while, you know, that I reflect and say, "Hang on, there's something wrong here." And what's wrong? Is it the monastery which is wrong? It's never outside, it's always yourself. It's always Ajahn Brahm is wrong, not the monastery. Not Jhana Grove, not you guys. Any problem, me. This one in here. I had the wrong attitude. Because I noticed, why do people come to Bodhinyana Monastery and they say it's beautiful and peaceful? When I live there, it's not peaceful. Why? And the reason was, because you were visitors and I was the owner. And that was a big difference. And once you got that big insight, and you see how to meditate so easily. If you're the owner of a place, you look at a monastery in a totally different light. It's your responsibility, you know, you've got to teach, look after everybody, make sure it's clean, because you own the place. But if you're a visitor, you don't need to sweep the grounds if you're a visitor. You don't need to wash the dishes if you're a visitor. I give the simile. If you go to somebody else's house for dinner, do you sometimes go to other people's houses for dinner? After the dinner, because you know you're the guest, do you wash the dishes for them afterwards? You do. If you do, you're weird. When you go to somebody else, they invite you for dinner, you don't wash the dishes for them afterwards. Now that's their job. You're the visitor. You don't cook for them. You just sit down there and enjoy yourself, and they come and be with the food you eat there. After you've eaten your lot, then talk a bit, say bye-bye, and then they clean up afterwards, because you're a visitor, not an owner. When you go and visit somebody else's house for afternoon tea, do you vacuum their carpet and just wipe the shelves and clean? Of course you don't. You're the visitor. That's what they do, or their maid does. You don't do it because you are visitor. And this was the trick. I decided, instead of being an owner of Bodhidharma Monastery, I used to do this every Monday morning. Every Monday morning, I would be visitor. Not the abbot, not the teacher, visitor. And because I pretended that, I got my perception to be visitor. On Monday mornings, Bodhidharma Monastery was so peaceful and serene and beautiful. You know, sometimes visitors would come up and say, can I ask some questions on meditation? I said, no, no, I'm not the abbot, I'm a visitor. They said, can you help? Just, you know, we're doing some sweeping. No, 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 I'm a visitor, I'm not an owner today. And with that attitude, it changed the whole perception. I could see Bodhidharma Monastery the same way you can. You're visitors. And once I saw that, I gave this advice to people. When you go home, in your house, please spend an hour or two as a visitor, not an owner. You know, you work so hard for your house or your apartment. You cleaned it enough. You know, all the work, you've done enough. Be a visitor for an hour or two. You can really enjoy your house. So you can make yourself a cup of tea. You don't have to clean the dishes because it's not your house. You spill things on the floor. Don't wipe them up. It's not your house. Relax and enjoy yourself. You can see how you can let go if you're not an owner. And then I realize how you use that in meditation. If you own your meditation, it's always work. Always something to do. Something to improve. You've got limiters, but they're not the full limiters. The bright ones. You've got work to do. You've got the bright limiters, but it's not jhana yet. You've got work to do. You've got jhanas, but you haven't got streaming in yet. You've got work to do. You're an arahat, but you haven't got psychic powers yet. You've got work to do. There's always work to do if you're an owner. But imagine that you thought you were just visiting your mind. You're just a visitor to your body. You don't own it. Because you don't own it, you can be irresponsible. You don't have to worry about the body. Ah, it's got cancer, it's tired, it's falling apart, it's ugly. Who cares? It's not my body. It's not my problem. I'm just going to visit it for a little while and enjoy it. Can you see just how, when you're a visitor to your body, how much more free it is? You don't have so much to do. If you're an owner, you're in trouble. You've got stuff to do. Now, see if you can be a visitor to your mind. Not my mind. I'm just hanging out with it for a while, that's all. And afterwards, if it's not good, bye-bye. I'll go somewhere else. When you're a visitor, not an owner, especially to all the other things in your meditation, then there's no problem at all. It's not your meditation. Nothing to do with me. I'm just visiting for a while, just enjoying it. Just like visit Jhana Grove for a while, enjoy the place, and then you're off afterwards. You know, you're not going to worry about sort of what's happening here afterwards, paying the bills, building stuff, cleaning up. You do a little bit of cleaning up, but just the major stuff comes later on. You don't have to worry about that, doing the gardening, you know, whatever else is happening over here, because you're just a visitor for 9 days. Wonderful. So being a visitor, not an owner, is one of the great insights which leave you to letting go. It doesn't matter, you get nice meditation, bad meditation, who cares, you're just a visitor. And the other, one of the other insights which comes along with this, or which is close to it, is that you notice how many people come up during the interview time and said, I had a very nice meditation the first day, but I can't get back there again. And I've been meditating and meditating and meditating, and still I can't get the nice meditation again. And that's where I told this story, which is became a joke. You know, sometimes, you know, people go on the internet and they get jokes. Have you ever wondered where those jokes came from? And you know, some of them actually have come from me. You know, it's just, you know, you see them, you say something, you make it up, you know, it's originally yours, you didn't hear it from somewhere else. And it goes round and round, and then one day somebody sends it to you, you know, on a list of jokes. And that's really cool when you say, yeah, that's my joke, I said that. Because it has to come from somewhere, you know, you wonder where these jokes originate from. There's a few people who supply them. You know, I've only supplied a couple, but you know, there's many in the world, but that's where they come from. This one was, you know, when people ask me, why does that happen? And they say, if you really do lots and lots of meditation, become very skilled, will every meditation be a good one? Now, Ajahn Brahm, all your meditations, every one jhana. So, of course not. And this is the answer, why? And that was the joke of the, I think what they call it in Singapore, the guest workers. A guest worker comes from some poor country to Indonesia to work on the building site. When he comes with his wife, and he works really hard all day Monday. And when he goes home, his wife said, did you get any money today? He said, no, he didn't pay me. And he goes there on Tuesday, really works hard. Wednesday, he also works hard. And every evening his wife said, how much did you make today? He said, nothing. 3 days and never got paid. And he said, this is really terrible. You know, I'd hate Singapore, they just exploit you. You work really hard, you don't get any money for working. And his wife said, I'll just try again one more day, Thursday. So he worked really hard on Thursday, it didn't happen again, no money. And so he thought, no, I'm going back home to my country. But, you know, he couldn't go yet, so and nothing else to do. So he went to work on Friday anyway. And on Friday, his boss gave him a big pay packet with lots of money. And when he went home, he said, I've worked out how it works in Singapore. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Fridays. You can see for a simple person, that makes so much sense. I've only got to work on payday. But of course you realise, you know, because you know how it works, that payday, you're paid for all the work you've done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It all accumulates and they just pay you once on one day a week instead of every day. And that's the same with meditation. You know, sometimes, not every day can be payday in meditation. But, all those meditations, you think, oh, this is difficult, this is troublesome, we're not getting anywhere. Every meditation you don't get a paycheck is important. You build those up, and when you do get a paycheck, it's a big one. But you can't just expect to go to work on Fridays. And that's actually how it happens. So when you're meditating, no, it's not a payday. Don't worry, you know, you're building up some credit. And you'll soon get the payday. Now that sort of insight is really, really helpful because it means you don't get so disturbed or depressed or, you know, fed up because it's not working. It does work eventually. Just keep on. You build it up and then you get your payday. What you're really building up, what I keep on saying here, what you should do if you want great meditation is just build up your peace. Every moment you make peace. And that is another dollar in the bank ready to come to you. Another just making peace with things, making peace with things, making peace. Because they said the first night, a hall like this is made of bricks, laid one at a time. Jhanas are just so many moments of peace which accumulate. So much letting go which accumulates until it's really strong and you get this huge paycheck. That's how it works. So this is actually the insight which comes up. So we use insight. These are just a couple of examples of how you learn to meditate, how you learn to become more peaceful still. I should actually mention also the fear thing. Because fear and excitement, when you get deep in meditation, they're the big obstacles. Quite frankly, what are you afraid of? You know, you've come all this way to get some nice meditation. When jhana is offered to you on a plate. No, no, thank you. No, no. No, no, not me. No, no, go away, go away, go away. You're crazy. Yeah, it's powerful, it's blissful, but why not? Don't be so timid. You know, to be enlightened, you have to be quite courageous, adventurous. You know, try and go places you've never been before just to find out what's there. Then, I don't know, maybe education or culture, you know, is not adventurous enough. Not try new things. See what happens. You know, you see a door, just go and see what's inside it. Instead of just, you know, oh, no, I better not. Who knows what's in there? Am I getting into trouble? And I always get into trouble. Well, not always, but a lot. But you just go and try new things, be adventurous. And that's what you do in meditation. Oh, this is really interesting. What's happening here? You've got a brilliant, beautiful light. It's really powerful. Oh, yeah. What's this all about? So you don't shrink away from it. And in fact, your mind is naturally adventurous. It naturally wants to explore and wants to find out new things. Obviously, it wants to know it's safe. And I've mentioned many times how safe this meditation is. But when you get to interesting places, just see what's there. If you've got bliss, just go for it. See what's happening. You've got a brilliant light? Yes. See what's in the center of it. All of those things, there's that sense of adventure, the sense of courage, which stops all the fear. But nevertheless, sometimes it is a bit scary. And for those of you who do get scared, you know, take some solace in, think, Majjhima Nikaya 36, where the Buddha said how scared he was doing these jhanas. And then he said, why am I afraid of such a bliss which has nothing to do with the world? And that was, he used his insight. This is a bliss which has got nothing to do with the body and the world. It's safe stuff. And with that insight, with that understanding, then there's no more obstacles to the jhanas and then enlightenment. And from that time on, I've read it so many times, I can point it out to you into the suttas. The Buddha said, this jhanas, you should not be afraid. Not bhayitabhan is the Pali word. You should not be afraid of it. Go for it. And so once we understand what the fear is, and we realize it's nothing we should really be scared of, then we let go of the fear and go into it. It's a bit uncomfortable at first, because you haven't been there before, but the bliss is so strong, who cares? You're having a great time. And you will never, ever regret it. 100% guaranteed. You can kick my bottom all the way to Singapore if you do regret it. That's how confident I am. I wouldn't like that, and I know it won't happen because I know what I'm talking about. It's great stuff. So don't be afraid. And if you are afraid, what are you afraid of? Sometimes I ask myself, what is fear anyway? Fear is always losing, about to lose, something you're attached to. Fear is just the attachments falling away. Fear of death, it's just, you know, you're attached to your body and you're afraid of it disappearing. You know, fear of rejection, you know, you're attached to this idea of who you think you are, and you're afraid of it disappearing, being taken away from you. All fear is of an attachment about to go. That's why when you let go of attachments, there'll always be a little bit of fear. That's a sign, that's a good sign. Your attachment's about to vanish. You're afraid. Just go a little bit through that fear. That is one of the reasons why when you do walking meditation, I already mentioned you can do these mantras, these words you say with the meditation, like breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. You can do that with your walking meditation. But this is the best mantra ever. Try it. It's good fun. Scares you at first. But when you get through the scary stuff, you really get some nice insights. When you start on the walking meditation path, maybe you use your right foot first. And so as your right leg moves, you say to yourself, I will die. As the left foot moves, that's for sure. I will die. That's for sure. I will die. That's for sure. Now you keep doing that. And at first you think, this is stupid. This is crazy. And you start laughing to yourself. I will die, that's for sure. I will die, that's for sure. Now it comes from Thailand. Die. Neh. Die. Neh. Or if you are Indonesian, it's mati pasti. So mati pasti. Is it? That's right, isn't it? Mati pasti. Mati pasti. Mati pasti. It even rhymes in Indonesian. Sort of. So, mati pasti, mati pasti. So what happens? You know, you get to this, think this is silly. But then this is a truth which you cannot deny, you cannot argue with. It's real. I will die. That's for sure. You get scared. You know, I'm not ready to die. I've got too many things to do. Too many people I love and care for. And I'm too young to die. I'm only 70. People say that. You know, I've seen them in the hospitals getting cancer. And there's a famous one. She was reported in the United States, 96. 96 years of age. Never had a day's illness in her life. Had something, didn't feel that well. Went for a test. 96 years of age. The doctor diagnosed cancer. And her response was, why me? Why me? She'd got away with it for 96 years and she said, why me? But anyway, I will die, that's for sure. And you get afraid because it is true. Everything else in life you may argue with and may not believe, but that, that's in your face. It's true. You get scared. What are you scared of? Scared of all your attachments being taken away from you. So that fear, you can get huge insights there of all the attachments you have. And you can't, nothing goes with you. So you have to leave it all behind. These are all the things you worry about and spend time thinking about. They can all be taken away from you. You know, your job, your family, you know, your money, whatever else you like. It's all going to be taken away from you. I would know that for sure. And so it's not important anymore. Nothing to think about. You actually walk through the fear. Once the fear goes, you feel so free. Nothing to worry about in the whole world. You're going to die, so there's nothing to worry about. All your achievements, what you achieve, what you don't achieve, it'll all be forgotten. All your reputation, good person, bad person, whether you go to jail or whether you become the president, we're all the same when we die. Beautiful, ugly, we're all the same. It's a beautiful letting go. So actually that's what happens. You walk through the scary stuff, you keep on going, and the scary stuff soon disappears, and afterwards, that's where you get the paycheck. That's really peaceful. You're totally free. You're a bird now. No luggage of the past or the future. No birds, no attachments. You fly. And that's what it's like. You've let go. Just by a little bit of insight meditation like that, I will die, that's for sure, on the walking path. It's very hard to do that when you're sitting down because, you know, when you're sitting down, you soon sort of get very peaceful and go to sleep or something. But when you're walking, you know, I will die, that's for sure. It gets always talking to yourself and it really, really works. So that's a nice insight. Now, So that scary stuff is always a sign that insight is about to happen. You're about to let go of some attachments. So if you do have fear in the meditation, well done. Something's happening. Good. Unpleasant, but it's worth it. Someone described it once. You know how a flower blossoms? If you see a flower, before it actually blooms, you've got this bud. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger because all of the petals are growing inside this container, this bud, and the pressure is building up. And it's really hard inside because they're growing, they're growing, they're growing. That's painful. But then it bursts. And this beautiful flower emerges. It's now free and can express its incredible beauty, fragrance, and lovely colours and scent. That's a flower. But before it blooms, it's tight, pressurized. That's like fear. The fear is, you know, like labour pains of insight. That's not bad. Insight is about to happen. This great wisdom baby is about to come out of your tummy. And that's what happens. And after the fear comes, the inside is there. Wow. And you freed yourself from something. Now, those are pretty, accurate of how insight happens. So if you are any little bit of suffering, any little bit of difficulty, any bit of fear, stay there. Insight is about to be born. The flower is about to bloom. You're going to learn something. And you'll be so much better for it. Now, the other part, that's actually how you use insight in meditation. I was going to say how you get insight so you get enlightened. I've got 8 minutes to talk about enlightenment. Anyway, what happens? I've already given one example the first day of this retreat. Go and look at the lake this evening, because the full moon is still high. See the full moon for a few days. What is the reflection of the full moon like in the lake? If there's any wave on the surface of that lake, any ripple, the whole image is distorted. But sometimes, if you're really lucky, there's no wind at all. There's no ducks on the lake. There are some few ducks there now. But if they're sleeping and just sort of, well, actually, they don't sleep here. They meditate, our ducks. Maybe, who knows? You know, one of the most stupid jokes in the world. I love stupid jokes. They're the best. Two ducks were swimming on the pond. And one duck said to the other, quack. And the other duck said, I was going to say that. Such a silly joke. Anyway, there's no ducks on the pond. There's no ducks on the pond. There's no lake, no waves on it. This time, you can actually see incredible, perfect reflection of the moon. And that's almost like being a simile, a symbol of meditation. Of the full moon reflected in the lake. It has to be still to reflect. And that is actually how you get wisdom. The real insight, the real wisdom, and not how to meditate, not how to live your life, about what is the meaning of life and who you are. You have to be totally still for that to happen. That's why Ajahn Chah said, sitting perfectly still under the mango tree, the mangoes fall by themselves. When you are perfectly still, no waves, no ripples, then you get an accurate reflection of who you are and what this world is all about and what you should be doing. Also, jhanas. Why do you need those incredible deep states of meditation? Because those deep states of meditation, you will actually learn about happiness. Insight into happiness. It's incredible that people think they know what happiness is. You know, the happiness falling in love, having kids, going traveling, going to see these amazing places in the world, you know, go and see the Himalaya Mountains. Have you seen the Himalaya Mountains yet? You don't need to. This is a hill, same thing. Have you seen the Great Wall of China? You don't need to see the Great Wall of China. Bodhinyana Monastery, we've got a wall there. A wall's a wall. Have you seen Niagara Falls? You don't need to go to Canada to see Niagara Falls. Go in your shower and turn it on. All the same. So all these people who go touring around trying to be happy. And you find that you just can sit down right where you are and have more happiness than anyone else in the whole world. No need to travel anywhere. No need to buy anything. No need to have another person around. It's all there for you. It's right here, right now. We run away seeking for happiness somewhere else. And then one day you sit here in a place like this, or in some temple or some place, you just sit down and meditating, and you get more happiness than you've ever had. More happiness than you ever thought was possible. Why? And you find it's because you've let go of things. You freed yourself. We try and seek happiness through attachments, through owning stuff, for being something. We find that's not the way of happiness. At least we get insight. You don't have to be anybody. You don't have to own anything. You don't have to have other people saying how great and how wonderful you are. You just, all the other people disappear. All your possessions, you can't see them when you're meditating. You don't give a damn what other people think of you. You're sitting here perfectly content, with more happiness than you've ever had in your life. Four Noble Truths summarized in one sentence. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. It's a brilliant saying. That's the Four Noble Truths all in one. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. We spend all our time wanting something, wanting jhanas, wanting enlightenment, wanting food, wanting something, which means we don't enjoy what we already have. And when you stop wanting, you discover you've got more than enough. More than enough happiness. You're always wanting something else, so you miss it. Where's happiness? Where's happiness? You know that once, now these glasses I wear, they're only reading glasses. You know, I need them for reading, but I decided to wear them all the time. Because once I was going, you know, from monastery to our city centre one Friday, and I asked my driver, I said, oh crikey, I've left my glasses back in the monastery and I can't read without them. And, you know, can you please turn around, I've got to go back. And he said, Ajahn Brahm, they're on your nose. Has ever that happened to you? Of course it's happened to most of us. It happened to me that time. It was Amanda saw that. He was my driver that day. You know, of course you get used to it. You don't actually feel it there. You know, and it's just normal. So, you know, I was just getting used to wearing glasses and I thought I'd left them because I couldn't find them in my bag. I couldn't find them anywhere because they're on my nose. And I can't see them there. And so after that I decided to keep on wearing them all the time. So at least I know where they are now. Put them in my bag, you lose things. Do you lose things in your bag? Yeah, my glasses got no hope in there. So I keep them on here and I actually know where they are. Actually, what was I? I forget where this one was going as well now. Sorry? The enlightenment. 8 minutes to enlightenment. Yeah, we're good. I'm not gonna make it, I've only got 1 minute left. Oh, that's right, thank you, yes. This is one of the troubles. When you become a monk, you let go of the past. You're always there in the present moment. So you don't know what you just said a few hours ago. So when you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. It's already here. And I was looking for my glasses, looking for them over here, looking for them over there, looking for them all over the place. And they were all right here all the time. Just like happiness. You look for it in relationships, you know, in reflection of another person, that they love you and care for you. You know, you look for happiness in travel, experiences, some in wealth, in fame, in achievements and stuff. And you realize it's been on your nose all the time. So if you stop looking outside, stop wanting things, this is where you find you have more happiness than you ever needed. It always has been here. From the very beginning of this retreat, I asked you not to want things, not to try and aspire for things, just to be, not to go somewhere. That's the insight into where enlightenment is. Ultimate happiness. Nibbānaṁ paramaṁ sukhaṁ. Nibbāna is the highest happiness. What can that mean? So, if you're suffering on this retreat, you're going the wrong way. You're wanting something, you're trying to get something, stop it and just give up. You're hopeless. No way can you. And that's great when you give up. I'm hopeless, I'm terrible, I'll never be able to do this. So you give up wanting and then you find you're enlightened. Brilliant. I mean, it really feels like it too. You get blissed out of your head. Tears coming out of your head. Oh, wonderful, I'm so happy. And you are. And it's great, isn't it? You don't need all this stuff. You don't need to go and finish a degree and become some professor to be happy. You don't need to get a Nobel Prize. You don't need to be the most beautiful woman on the cover of Vanity Fair magazine. You don't need to score the winning goal in the World Cup soccer for Singapore. You don't need anything. All this striving and wanting stuff. You know, yeah, you go out there, you work, but that's not the point of working. You work just something to do, I suppose. But your happiness is something totally different. You're getting the insight into the end of suffering. Greatest Buddhist teaching. So there's suffering. I meditate, I'm still suffering. Working, I'm still suffering. I'm wealthy, I'm still suffering. I'm really famous, I'm still suffering. I got my whole harem of beautiful girlfriends, I'm still suffering. I got these gorgeous men just lining up for me, still suffering. And then you come along and just meditate, and no more suffering but happiness. Sometimes you wonder, Jhana Grove, why is there such a waiting list? Why did you have to go on a ballot to get here? A ballot to have the privilege of not having any supper. What do you think about it? It's weird, isn't it? But would you like to come here again?
Yes.
Happiness. So, if you think you're not getting anywhere in meditation, your answer now told me, yes, you are getting a long way in insight. You're understanding what happiness is. Real happiness. It doesn't have to be here, it could be home, but it's when you have this beautiful attitude. Making peace with things, just being here. Now, all this goals and striving and stuff, that takes you away from happiness. When I want something more, I can't enjoy what I already have. When you're on your mobile phone, you can't see the sunset. When you're trying to sort of send an email, you know, you're not being aware of the sound of the birds. Beautiful sound. Just being here. Not wanting anything in the whole world. Totally content. That's happiness. Sadhu! Sadhu! Very good. Okay.